This podcast is sponsored by Q Interactive, Pearson's iPad-based system for testing, scoring, and reporting. Experience unheard of efficiency and client engagement with 20 of their top tests delivered digitally. Sign up for your 30-day free trial at pearsonclinical.com/speechscience or call 1-800-627-7271 and use promo code SPEECHSCIENCE for 10% off your new Q Interactive license. Offer valid until December 31st, 2018.
Please listen carefully.
What is communication?
The act of taking a thought from my head and putting it into your head.
Essential behavior of life. We have the both blessing and responsibility of trying to foster
it. It's the strongest way for two people to convey information to each other.
Bridging what I have in my head to the outside world.
I think it's the ability to share your innermost feelings and thoughts with
Whatever
others.
Whatever it is that we do to express intent and achieve an impact.
Communication is the ability to express your needs, wants, frustrations, and desires to anyone that you feel needs to have that information.
Welcome to episode 48 of the Speech Science Podcast. I'm Matt Hott, joined down south by Michelle Wintering.
Hey.
And representing the Philadelphia Phillies, Michael McLeod.
What's up, buddy?
And I know you're not a Phillies fan. You're a Mets fan, right?
I am a Yankees fan.
Or a Yankees fan. Whatever. It's all the same thing.
I like the Mets too. They're cool.
Yeah, I've never been to a Mets game. I've been to a Yankees game.
I'm starting to like the Phillies a bit, though. They have a very cool stadium.
Live somewhere long enough, they kind of grow on you.
Yeah. Citizens Bank Park.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yep. Really nice. Beautiful place.
I lived in New York for a year and never gave up my Cincinnati and Ohio teams.
Was it 2009, 2010 that they won the World Series?
The Yankees?
No.
No, the Phillies.
Phillies in 2009. Yeah, or 2008.
Okay.
And then the Yankees beat them the next year.
Oh, yeah, because wasn't it some curse? Every baseball team has a curse, I feel like.
That was the Red Sox.
No, the Phillies had a different curse, too, and the Cubs had the Billy Goat. And
it was something about the statue, the highest building.
The William Penn thing?
Yes.
Yes. They were not supposed to build any buildings higher than his hat.
Really?
And then once that Comcast tower went up, everything was higher than his hat.
And they said that's why the Phillies never won.
Well, that's dumb.
Now we got a lot of
Every baseball team seems to have some curse for some reason.
That's true.
I'm a Reds fan and a Bengals fan, and the Bengals lost this weekend, so I got nothing. But the
Browns, the other Ohio team, won.
Cleveland Brown. That's right.
Cleveland Browns finally undefeated for 1 week. Anyway, it's been about, 3 weeks since we've been on air. We'll start with you, Michael. What's been going on over the last 3 weeks for yourself?
Well, the school year has started in full swing. Things have been really busy at the clinic. I've had some full caseloads at a couple of schools I've been at, getting everything together for my IRB research study. So that's been a real pain, but we're getting there, getting to the finish line, working with my staff and all my new families and all the different professionals that I collaborate with. Things have really started very, very quickly. It's almost like summer never even happened. So things have been real busy right away, and it's been good. It's been a good start.
Awesome. Michelle, how about you? How's the last couple of weeks been treating you?
I think when we last talked, the next day I was taking my son for his tongue tie release.
That's right.
So that was successful, and he is doing a little better with feeding and eating and everything post that procedure. It took a few days to heal up. But I got to be on the other side of the table for a speech language pathology evaluation, because one of the follow-ups after that procedure was with a speech pathologist who specifically deals with that kind of stuff every day. So I think I can learn from her. I'm going to see her for a couple. personally and professionally.
That is the hard part when one of your family members or kids goes through something like that, of turning off your therapy hat and just being
mom.
Yeah. Being mom or family member. My dad, when he went through his stroke and the therapist came in to do the testing, I was like, what's your credentials? How long have you been doing this? Which test are you using? And she looked at me and she was just like,
you're a new clinician, aren't you? And I was like, oh, yep. I'm just going to go sit here in the corner. Just
you're a newbie, aren't you?
I'm a newbie.
Yeah. So that was an interesting, but very good experience.
Awesome. The last couple of weeks for me, I worked at comic convention all weekend. Worked admissions there, have been doing evaluations here in the school district, and that's about it. I mean, I'm pretty light on excitement lately, so I got nothing.
I don't know. it's been fun. I'm enjoying the slightly cooler weather we're getting in this part of the country with the rain.
Yes, and if you are near like the Midwest like we are super glad not to be in the 900 degree temperature range.
900.
It was 95, 98 for the last couple of weeks. All right, whatever. Anyways, we want to hear from you as well. Head to our website, podcasts.speechscience.org. From there, you can email us, and our email has changed. It's speechscience2018@gmail.com, or you can give us a phone call, 614-681-1798. I just realized I didn't check to see if we had any voicemails. I'll check there during the break to see if we've got any. Coming up after the break, though, we do have, we'll see. We have an article with RPM in the news again. We are going to be talking about dementia and autism in private schools. You're listening to Speech Science.
Some knowledge belongs to us, and us alone. The way our girlfriends walk, the way they talk, the way they touch their hair. We hold details that only a sister can know about her girls. But what about our other girls? The ones that we carry with us every day. Can we describe them when everything's right? Can we feel when something's wrong? Our bond with our sister girls gives life. But knowing your breasts can save it. You don't know go to knowyourgirls.org for the facts you need on breast health. That's knowyourgirls.org, brought to you by Susan G. Komen and the Ad Council.
Okay, men, this is your time. Maybe you didn't choose this, but you're here now. You're gonna go out there and be an all-star caregiver. It's up to you. So what are you gonna do? You're gonna go grocery shopping, cook, clean, be there emotionally and physically. You gotta dig deeper. Drive them to physical therapy, doctor's appointments. Don't you forget about the pharmacy. I know you won't, because that's what caregivers do. Don't give up. Don't ever give up. This is your time to show the world, your family, and yourself that you're tougher than tough. Now go out there and be the best caregiver this world has ever seen. Caregiving is tougher than tough. Find the care guides you need at aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Speed Science, episode 48. I'm Matt Hott, joined by Michael McLeod.
What's up, buddy?
And Michelle Wintering.
Hello again.
I love the secret stuff that we never say about podcasting, like Michael getting kicked out of our software for the last 2 minutes of that last conversation.
Yes. Yeah, so if we wondered where Mike went, that's why.
That is a true story. That really did happen to me.
I really thought, I was like, okay, Michael's just pausing in the video. Nope. No, he's not moving at all. He's not even breathing. Nope. I don't think he's here.
And the anxiety and the cold sweats that brings you when you're in the middle, it's insane. Like, I couldn't charge my computer when we first started recording. And I was like, oh God, like, this is like, why is this happening to me right now?
And that's all related?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, okay.
Well, and I think, Matt, you deserve a shout out for keeping us technologically connected.
Yes, fair enough.
You got the hot connection, bro.
The hot connection. Matt Hott.
I feel like I am, the tech guru, I guess, as I sit here and just click buttons the whole time, I guess. So,
well, you, I feel like our listeners should know that you filtered out slurping sounds out of our last podcast. Yeah.
Let's not talk about the one that didn't get posted for 3 weeks. I would appreciate that.
It's all good.
That
life-size Millennium Falcon is perfectly situated in the back.
Okay, I just want to say that the Millennium Falcon that's on the video that no one on the podcast can see, but it's over my shoulder, is perfectly in scale with all the 3¾-inch figures that my son has roaming around the room. Bad guys. And my son is yelling, "Bad guys,
help him!" On the video game.
That is awesome.
On the video game, we bought the new Spider-Man game. Here you go, Mike.
I heard that game is awesome.
It is pretty awesome. So I had to help him defeat a bad guy as he was yelling in the background. So before another bad guy shows up, we are like 6 minutes into the show and it's already off the rails.
And we are not even talking about
our first article is coming out of the Trinidad and Tobago Newsday. And it's talking about special needs access in private education. It tells the story of Jason, a 4-year-old young boy on the autism spectrum. And he was attending a prestigious preschool for about $7,000. And then they basically told him he needed to find a different schooling that would work with his social or for his social needs. My question to the both of you guys is reactions at first, and then what experience do you guys have working with private schools and maybe scholarship kids or scholarship students? Or do you have any experience that way?
Well, I love that you pulled an article from Trinidad and Tobago. That's pretty cool.
I try worldwide.
Well, yep. Done.
But no, so do you guys have any interactions with, you know, students on like the what we call scholarship students here at in Cincinnati schools?
When you say scholarship students, you mean students that are
I call them the scholarship students. They're students that do not attend the public school that they would attend. And maybe they go to ABS, maybe they go to an ABA school, maybe they go to the private Catholic school. And some of the schools, they, you know, they're on scholarship and they get their special needs, their therapies done in the school. And some of them, they don't.
And am I right? Is it state by state or is it across the board that private schools are not required to provide the special needs and adaptations?
I believe that is state by state.
Okay. Like a lot of things. And I know that we're also talking
IEPs.
Trinidad and Tobago here, so I'm not sure what their regulations are. Quick thing on the article I caught in the first paragraph there is where they say that the reason he was going to be held back, this young 4-year-old child who is on the autism spectrum, what they said high functioning autism, is because he could not yet read and write. And as a speech pathologist, I'm sorry, but that's crazy. Why are we expecting a 4-year-old to be able to read and write?
I don't know. But here's where I'm going to take the crazy stand here. I don't know how I feel about private schools providing special education.
I don't think you're crazy on that. That's obviously, there's a lot of states that agree with you.
Yeah, I mean, because like I think of there are certain schools that are, you know, college prep based. There are some schools that are technical based. I think, I don't know. I don't know how I feel about special education in certain high schools, because I feel like, I don't know. I don't know how I feel about that.
Well, I think this article touches on it really well in terms of what is the training of these individuals working at this private school. You touched on it before. These, not all private schools are mandated to have the special education curriculum or to have IEPs. So right there, that's telling you that the individualized curriculum for special needs is just not there. So are you going to have the training for the staff members, for the teachers, for one-to-ones that come in the building, the finances and the money flow in terms of private education and public education are totally different. And spending money on things like continuing education, trainings, tuition reimbursement are are quite difficult to come around. So if the individual staff are simply not trained in special needs, in autism, in communication, that's where we're going to see the issues.
I think it's also unique. I come from Cincinnati, where a lot of our private schools down here in Cincinnati are the Catholic schools. So we don't really have, like, I mean, there are the charter schools, don't get me wrong, but most of our private schools are all just the Catholic elementary and the Catholic high schools.
Yeah. So, and those are not, I, having attended a Catholic school, I mean, I don't recall there being resources for special education, not much. Anyway, like basic special education, possibly a resource room or certain pullouts for certain kids, but even counseling wasn't necessarily available. Yeah.
I know I see a couple students, or I don't see a couple students, but I write a couple IEPs for students at private schools, and I have to contact the speech pathologist that's working with them and usually try to figure out what they want as a goal and then try to write it so that if they were to come back to the public school. But there's also a drain of resources when we look at it that way, that you're working, you know, as a public school SLP, I've got 80 kids on my caseload, and my autism scholarship kids don't count as my caseload numbers.
But you're still working with them.
But I still have to write the IEP and maybe even go and test them. So
yeah,
it's like a hidden number that no one ever tells you about in the school districts.
So are they included in that 80, or is that 80 plus?
Is 80 plus.
Wow.
So here in Ohio, my numbers are only for direct service. So I have 80 direct service students plus my consult students. So the students that I deemed that didn't need me directly, but maybe I give the teacher some information. And then scholarship students. So the students that are attending the private schools, the students that are attending the ABA school or the ABA schools or something similar. So it's not uncommon that I might write 100 IEPs this year and I could still do 40 ETRs. And of that 100, only 80 are mine, technically.
That's crazy. So you're just doing the testing and the evaluation part.
And the writing, but not the therapy. So yeah. I got that going for me, as Bill Murray would say, which is nice.
the underappreciated school SLP, I tell you.
And I think maybe that's where my...
It's really amazing.
Like, I love that some private schools take on students, because I think that just because you're a student with high functioning autism or maybe, you know, need a little OT or PT or something similar shouldn't hold you back from going to the private school. I do love the fact that that happens, but I've read articles before where they said they want to force it in the private schools. And I don't think that's is the point I was trying to get earlier, that I'm just not a big fan of.
Yeah. Now, kind of a different topic on this, but I was just curious. I just pulled up the Speech Language Audiology Association of Trinidad and Tobago, because I was curious in a small country like that, how many SLPs they have.
Three.
And I'm looking at a list of all, at least according to their website, all of the Trinidad and Tobago licensed therapist, and there's about, and that's not Asha, there's a maybe 19 or 20. And on that list, it looks like there's six who have their C's.
Okay. So I wasn't too far off with my three. I remembered hearing that when we were in college, Michelle,
there were only three or four there.
So.
Yep. So anyways, that was just, I was curious about that because I know it's a very small country, and maybe we have listeners from there, other small places, but I'd love to hear from them about how they staff the schools there. And are there any therapists who work in any private school settings? I'm guessing not if your numbers are that low, but who knows?
Well, they have to speak Trinidadian and Toboggan. So they have to be bilingual.
And is it English and French, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that was a bad joke.
I understood where he was going with that. But we do want to hear from you. If you work with scholarship students, or, you know, are one of the 19 from Trinidad and Tobago, let us know what we got wrong or what we got right. Podcast.speechscience.org, or email us our new email, speechscience2018@gmail.com. And of course, we are speech pathologists, so we would love to hear you talk. Give us a phone call, 614-681-1798. And if you're a texter, not a talker, hashtag speech science, we will feature you on our website. Changing gears a little bit, a new study, these studies come out all the time, saying now maybe a high fiber diet can improve your brain health and maybe prevent dementia. And that resounding silence makes me feel like
I didn't know I was supposed to respond.
I'm trying to think what has fiber in it. So
bananas, fiber one bars.
No. Fiber one bars.
There you go.
Hey, let's see.
You know, fiber
all
is going to help
all brand cereal.
With your
apples, and apples have fiber, right?
Yeah. Well, it says researchers started in the intestines by focusing on a short chain fatty acid, which is produced by the bacteria that ferment fiber in the gut. Previous research found that a drug form of the butyrate reduced tissue inflammation in mice and boosted their memory. So maybe.
So we're in the very beginning stages of this being much research on it.
Yeah.
I mean,
nothing will come out of it.
Right. Isn't the fruits, if you're eating fruits, apples and stuff, to get the real fiber, you need the skin?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that true?
I believe so, yes.
Fruits, veggies, nuts, seeds, beans, whole grains will be even more vital, particularly for older adults, they say, as the results further reinforce a finding that's turning up in the study. What's healthy for the heart is also generally healthy for the brain, and reducing inflammation is critical important for both. So, you guys tell me.
He wants some fiber.
Guys,
give him some fiber.
Well, and so I guess my only concern with something like this is that, of course, this is going to come across and people are going to say, oh, I need to increase fiber. And they're still going to end up with vascular dementia or progressive dementia or something similar. This doesn't help.
Well, we look for the quick answer to everything.
That's and, true. Remember when red wine made our hearts healthier?
Exactly. So go back to the moderation, right? But if we're encouraging people to eat healthy diets, I don't think that's ever going to be harmful.
No, that's fair.
To your health, physical or mental. So
basically all of the money spent on this research could have been spent on treatment for individuals who already have dementia.
Funny you say that, because another study came out. This one's coming out of the Quartz magazine. I don't even know what that is, but they're predicting dementia rates are set to double by 2060. And they believe minorities will actually have a larger increase on the population with dementia than non-minorities.
Why? Why do they think
that?
Minorities? Yeah.
Let's see. They said, although Caucasian people are numerically expected to have the largest increase in cases, the surges are most dramatic in minority populations. People of color will make up a much larger percentage of the 65 and older. So the authors of the paper write that in 2014, only 22% of the age group were minorities. By 2060, they're expected to make up 45%.
Okay, so right now I'm looking at the article and it looks like right now statistically, just numerically, minorities make up a smaller percentage, but they're thinking that's going to surge. Is that correct?
Yeah, correct. Okay. But this is also in the U.S. CDC. They're looking at, you know, the researchers from the U.S. CDC. So it would make sense that as the population as a whole becomes less homogeneous and more heterogeneous, did I use the right terms there?
Yes.
A mixture?
Yeah.
That it would make sense that minority populations would have a larger percentage as they become a larger percentage of the population.
Well, the article does very smartly point out that people of color already face unique challenges in U.S. healthcare. Minorities do tend to receive poorer quality of health than white people statistically. And basically, as the proportion of people of color in elderly communities increase, there's going to be even more of a demand for physicians trained in geriatrics in more of those ethnically diverse areas.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
Basically, healthcare overall here is quite dicey, and the more of a affluent area you're in, the better access you are going to have for healthcare. So in those ethnically diverse areas where, you know, it's mostly middle class, lower class, access to healthcare is difficult. Access to healthy foods is difficult, to tie to the most recent article.
Yeah.
Well, it seems like the diagnoses are already happening, but in terms of the physicians reaching out to those communities, that seems to be completely outside of their control.
Fair.
and their time and their resources.
I want to see if I can find it was an opinion piece, I think, in the New York Times, and it was called The Case for Black Doctors. And the whole point of it, I'll see if I can find that article, we can link it. The whole point of it, as of the opinion piece, was from a black physician, maybe a psychiatrist, I can't remember, stating that just statistically there's a low percentage compared to the population in the US that are African-American and black that are doctors. And just like a woman might seek out a female doctor quicker than she would seek out a male doctor and feel more comfortable disclosing health issues and getting the help that they might need, the same is true for a minority population who we all tend to gravitate towards people, especially in a very intimate, like personal thing, like medical care, who you're comfortable with, whatever that means.
No, yes. That makes complete sense. Like doing home care, I've gone into places where I've worked with people that were not straight white males in their 30s. And there is definitely a large hill, wall to climb to make that connection.
Yeah.
Because there is definitely a defense where, you know, it's this person's not like me. Do they understand where I'm coming from? I have the same issue and I'm medically trained. When I go to the doctor for myself and I get the 23-year-old, you know, or 28-year-old physician's assistant female, and I'm like, hey, you don't know what it's like to be a 32-year-old male. Can mm-hmm. you really help me? And, you know, usually it's like, yes, here's your antibiotic for you being sick. Go lose some weight. Come back in 2 weeks, see how you're feeling. But like, it's a natural thing to want to try to seek help from somebody that maybe can identify with what you're going through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You can have one white doctor in the suburbs working with a man, and his recommendation could be, okay, after work, go to the gym or go for a walk around your community. And you can have a doctor in the inner cities who knows, who looks like his patients and understands his patients, who knows that, you know, after work hours, you're not going to walk around your community. There's no access to gyms. There's no access to healthy foods, or there's no Whole Foods or Trader Joe's in sight. So I think Michelle made a really great point. You know, in that intimate setting of healthcare, that's really when those mirror neurons are firing off, and you are going to have that connection with someone who understands you and understands your situation.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's so important for us as clinicians to remember. We do it from young kids all the way up, of finding something to connect with them on, especially if you don't look like them or you don't come from a similar background to them. And we have to, you know, it might be Paw Patrol with the young kid that walks in the door. But I'd love to get some messages or hear from any listeners who, especially in speech pathology, are minorities and people of color themselves, and what settings they work in and what their experience is. And also just, I don't know, this is an interesting topic and it's very relevant to everything happening in our country right now.
Well, and I think that's even why ASH has got such a push for diversifying from the white female speech and language pathology image that they have.
Exactly. And I mean, you two, right? I joke with you guys that the
podcast is 67% male.
It's the reverse of that. Well, with Lucas here, it's 75. And before me, it was 100%. And that is not typical. That is very atypical in speech pathology to not have the, I mean, Matt, you were our token male in our,
that's true,
in grad school.
And so was I. And so was I.
And I, and, you know, and not a little bit of a humble brag, Oh my gosh.
Humble bro.
You know, the ASHACertified.org, which is their ASHA C story, you know, they threw me up there as my ASHA story, and I'm scrolling through and they're doing their best to show that it's not all white females, but you know, I'm looking at like right now and there's eight of the like 12. And you know, we need more diversity.
Gotta have some eye candy, man.
I appreciate you calling me the eye candy. I do appreciate that.
You lost a lot of weight. You're looking good, man.
Oh, thanks, man. So yeah, you can see my picture up there, the 40 pounds ago. But we do.
I linked that article to you, Matt. So we can
see that.
It's an opinion piece, but it's an interesting read.
No, we will throw that in the show notes. It is The Case for Black Doctors by Damon Tweedy.
When you log on to ASHA.org and you see a picture, there's a link for audiology, there's a link for speech pathologist, and the very first picture there on the homepage is a dude. It's a dude working with kids. I always thought that was so interesting.
Yeah, you're right. I just pulled that up. He is doing, looks like the Goldman Fristo.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's a hard fight because there's also the, you know, what drives speech and language pathology to be a predominantly female field.
Yeah, there's been a couple battles on the SLP Facebook groups recently over some male SLP. So it's a sensitive topic these days.
When you say battles, what do you mean?
Just a lot of people getting heated on Facebook.
Well,
on their lunch breaks.
Are they upset about male?
it's a discussion of should ASHA be spending money that we send them to recruit more males.
Oh, interesting.
And there's been some questions about if the discussion should be fighting for more males in the field, or, you know, some people feel that ASHA should fight more to make sure that men and women's wages are the same.
And I think there was another argument. I think it was, how do the men speech pathologists end up becoming the supervisors
more
than women? That one got pretty wild.
It's a good topic. Maybe we should do that again. Maybe we should talk more about this next week.
It is a good topic.
We want to hear from you. If you've got an opinion on the amount of males or not males in the field, please hit us up. Go to our website, podcast.speechscience.org. or email us speechscience2018@gmail.com, phone call 614-681-1798, or hashtag speech science. Our last article is the proverbial horse that will never die. I feel like we keep beating on it every couple of months. In the Wall Street Journal, an opinion piece by Ido Kadar. He wrote in and said, basically, Ash is wrong. RPM is what allows him to communicate. And we should put all of our, you know, evidence-based practice where he believes it belongs, which is in the books and not in therapy. I don't know why this keeps coming up, but now this is going to be like the big mainstream thing, and now we're going to have more battles to fight with this.
Well, here's the deal. I think that this is an example of the same discussion. We spent a whole podcast talking about this, right? And what we said is there are parts, I think we all agreed, there are parts of rapid prompting that are good. Okay, there are parts of it that are good, and maybe there are people it can help, and this is an example of that. But what I pulled from that article, at least, is the key point that he says he uses his arm now unassisted. So it helped him progress to doing it independently. And that is what, if you can't decrease prompting, then how do we know that it is truly that person's voice?
Here's my other thing. Michael, did we lose you?
No, I'm here.
Okay. Here's my other question. And every time I read an article like this or read a book written or an article or a page or anything written by someone who says this, my immediate reaction, and it's sad to say, is I wonder if the person really wrote this or somebody else wrote it.
I was thinking the exact same thing.
Yeah. That's fair. I mean, because there's so much question around this method that it's
like, I mean, I hate to say it, but like, I'm a, you know, master's level trained adult. And sometimes the writings that I use are not half as good as sometimes some of these articles written by a student or a person that has been locked in their body since the age of 7, have never received formal education, but they're using vocabulary that we would expect out of a grad student.
Yeah, this individual seems to be fairly highly trained in language and writing. You know, Matt touched on it beautifully, the vocabulary being used and the language being used to push this. This does it give an age? Is there an age for the?
I could probably Google him real quick.
That's what I was looking for before.
He's a 21-year-old man with autism, nonverbal.
Okay.
Is he the one who wrote
Ido in Autism Land?
The book. There's a book.
In Two Worlds?
Possibly.
I mean, and it's very much possible that, you know, that he really has this wonderful grasp of the language. And I really hope so. But, like, I hate to say it, but too many times have we seen things with facilitated communication or other, you know, people that have perversed RPM to a point where it's faked, that I have to question it. And I hate doing it, but I have to, because I don't want to give false hope for something.
Yeah, this he basically ends the article by saying, speech therapy, which I received to no effect for more than 10 years, is Ash's endorsed path to communication. That's something that I'm a part of a few stuttering groups on Facebook, like Stuttering Community and things like that. And I honestly consistently see that quite often. People saying, I've been in speech therapy for 15 years, 20 years, it's done no help for me. And just as a speech pathologist, as the pride of an SLP, it kills me to see that someone.
Yeah, I am with you on that.
Yeah, that drives me that, like, it's heart wrenching seeing that therapy can give you no benefit. And you want to just think, maybe if it was a different therapist, maybe if the therapist was trained, who knows? But the way this article ends by saying speech therapy was of no help, all that helped me was RPM. You know, that's they certainly went for the jugular at the end there.
But, you know, maybe there is some truth into what he says. Maybe you're right. Maybe his therapist didn't help him. Maybe they didn't pursue AAC.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's where, like, I want to know, I find myself when someone finds out I'm a speech language pathologist and they say to me, I saw a speech pathologist, my response is often, I hope that was a positive experience, or like, how was that for you, or something to follow up with it. Because sometimes I found exactly what Mike is saying, that they say, I hated it. Or, and some of them say, oh, I liked it. I got stickers and candy with pullouts and kindergarten, you know, like, and that's what they remember from it, but it helped them stay their S's.
Like, all we did was play apples to apples. And it's like, well,
yeah, that's something
therapy. I mean,
that's oversimplified, in quotes, therapy. And my hope is it brings me more joy when I hear someone say, oh no, my SLP really helped me. But it's,
I hope Asha has an article coming out to go against this. Maybe they've submitted something. I hope they did.
I'm really enjoying your son jumping in and needing you to fight the bad guys and multitask, Matt. You're right. Pretty good at that.
Well, and I'm trying over here, but, like, I still worry about, like, what is Asha's response to this? Like, this should not have, and I hate to say it, and I love the team over at Asha, but there's no reason that this should have hit without Asha already knowing about it and having a response ready to go.
Well, based on this article, it says that he was touching letters on a letter board, then a keyboard, then a voice output app. So,
and an iPad, I believe.
And an iPad. So technically, he was learning to type using AAC.
Right.
So how much of this is your true RPM? How was this not him learning phonological awareness, learning to type, and then learning to type on an AAC? Was this just labeled RPM? Was it labeled as something? Or did he just basically learn to communicate in in AAC style.
That's a good point.
And I think that's the bigger problem is like RPM is not really, we don't research RPM.
Yeah, I think this is a big issue. Is the therapy truly RPM, or are you just providing stimuli and asking for a response?
And if you, and that's the thing that goes back to Asha's statement, if they won't let us research it and run studies for RPM, then how are we going to show that it? Anyways, I'm sorry. We've been over this.
No, but like I've been thinking about it more. Like, okay, so they're not pursuing it. Why doesn't some entrepreneuring PhD student go out and decide that they're going to do it? Do the research. I know the ball's usually in the court of the research, but this is a shot across the bow that, you know, this article's been up for 12 hours, 18 hours today. This is Monday, September 24th, when we're recording this. Asha hasn't come out with a response yet.
Yeah, has.
I mean,
right, and I don't, who responds from Asha? Are they going to respond directly to this article? I don't know if that's...
They should.
They should, I mean, yes. I pulled up this young man, they said the 21-year-old, he has a blog and mm-hmm. a book, and there's videos and Autism Society stuff. So there's a lot, but I'm with you, Mike, that is this really RPM, or did he simply learn a sequence to communicate?
It sounds like from the article he was getting speech therapy.
Yeah.
That sounds like speech therapy.
But not through a speech pathologist, probably legit through the RPM method.
Maybe it was just regular prompting and not rapid.
Well, and I think, yeah, and I don't know. Like if you read the videos and stuff on the rapid part, I don't know, man. I really don't know.
It's impossible to know unless we're watching videos of what actually happened in this therapy.
Right.
Because the progression here from basically PECs to high tech seems pretty legit. But there's no legitimate evidence. There's no legitimate information on what was rapid and the exact training of the therapist.
And I'll go back to this, what I just said before, like the longer this stays up without any formal comment from Asha, it makes us look worse as a field.
I agree with that.
I mean, I hate to say that, but it's this is now getting traction. This is people who are not familiar with therapies. Read the Wall Street Journal, read the opinion section and go, huh, I wonder why that group of people are not open to such a success story. I don't know, man.
There's already 33 comments on the article.
So. Don't read them. They'll make your head hurt. I just started.
Your head hurt.
What's your opinion? Contact us. Go to podcast.speechscience.org. From there, you can email us speechscience2018@gmail.com or give us a phone call 614-681-1798. Or, of course, you can hashtag us Speech Science. We'll be right back. You're listening to Speech Science.
Hey, everyone. You know, let's all stop what we're doing right now and take a moment. That felt good, huh? Just like that, we had a nice special sort of moment together. Of course, they don't all need to be quiet moments to be special. They could be loud moments, goofy moments, sporty moments, dorky moments. Moments where we talk or walk or just hang out. It doesn't really matter. They all count. Because every time dads like us take a moment like that to spend with our kids, well, it's pretty momentous. Sounds like somebody agrees. So let's take a moment to make a moment. Today, call 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Do you have an idea up for a product or book? Or are you ready to go beyond in-service presentations? Well, how do you get started? And what if you don't have any business experience at all? Well, I have some great news for you. I'm Mei-Ling Chan, and I'm getting the nitty-gritty stories from parents, teachers, therapists, advocates, and people with disabilities who have created successful businesses, and they're sharing their intimate stories with you. Listen to us on the Exceptional Leaders Podcast and fast-track creating and building and sharing your idea with the world so that you can help more people.
As humans, we ask ourselves all kinds of questions. But what if we were forced to ask ourselves a question every day that affected the outcome of the most basic things, the most important things in our lives? The question is, what is your sexual orientation or gender identity? And the answer is the difference between keeping your job or getting fired. The answer is the difference between staying in your home or getting evicted. The answer is the difference between receiving medical treatment or not. Because in 31 states, it's legal to discriminate against people based on their answer to this question. LGBT Americans have the right to say, I do, but they don't have the same basic rights as everyone else. Get the facts at beyondido.org. Brought to you by the Gill Foundation and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Speed Science, episode 48. We're wrapping it up here. I'm Matt Hott, joined by Michelle Wintering.
Hello.
And Michael McLeod.
What's up?
What were you guys talking about during break there?
Well, we were talking about locked-in syndrome, and Mike brought up a book that I need to now read. Go ahead, Mike. What was that called?
I'm sure many of our listeners read it during grad school because they were it was mandatory for their class. But it is a wonderful book called The Diving Bell and the Butterfly, which is pretty much the locked-in syndrome book, an incredible book that the author wrote simply by blinking his eye using an alphabet board.
Note and eye, one eye.
One eye, right? Just one eye. The other eye was patched shut, so it was one eye. And everyone just thought that he was in a coma and couldn't do anything, but his speech pathologist came around and recognized his ability to communicate. So it's a great pro SLP story.
Nice. I like
that. Is pretty cool, actually. My closing story for this: have you guys seen the new Apple Watch?
Yeah, with the screen time thing
and the fall detection and mobile EKG. Have you seen this?
No,
I saw the commercial for it where it had to remind the guy to stand up because he was sitting for too long.
That's what mine will do. But no, so evidently this new Apple Watch is coming out. It's got a EKG it's got an EKG feature. It's also got AFib detection, slow heart rate alerts, and fall prevention.
Huh.
So basically the watch can determine if you trip versus if you fall, and you can turn it on. So if you're over 65 and you fall and you don't move for 1 minute, the phone or the watch will initiate a phone call to 911 with your exact location.
Huh.
And pretty it will amazing. Also send a text message to your emergency contacts that you have in your health app, alerting them that you have fallen and not moved in your home.
See, this is the kind of technology that we need. This is the use of technology that is awesome because it can make such a difference in somebody's life.
Now we just need it to calculate MLU, chronological age,
yep.
do language samples.
There is an app for that, though.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I use it every time. I refuse to do the math in my head.
But yeah, so no, like the thing that I was reading though about this new Apple Watch is they're saying that the only problem is that they don't think the doctors are ready for the patients to show up with like a 7-day EKG printout of their heart rate. But they said it could help prevent some strokes because patients will be able to identify, you know, potential stroke symptoms, I guess, through the EKG. And also, but they said doctors are not really ready for patients to walk in with 7 days of
Well, heart studies. Okay, not really ready, but at least it gives them some kind of baseline to look at. That's know when true. I did my clinicals in inpatient acute care, how many times I was doing a cognitive evaluation, and I just thought, if I could just know what their baseline was, I could make a better judgment on how they're doing right now. And that's where this obviously is not speech and language in EKG, but that's huge. Even if it's not 100% accurate, it gives them something.
True.
They said the same kind of thing when Obamacare first started, that once there was easier access to healthcare, doctors' waiting rooms across the country would be packed and there'd be huge waiting lists and lines. And that never happened.
Yeah, so, I still don't want to go to the doctor, and I have insurance.
Exactly. So people going in with giant print-ups of EKG from their Apple Watch.
Probably not going to happen.
I think doctors can relax.
Yeah. And it probably wasn't a doctor who wrote that article.
No, it wasn't. But the only thing that it does not do is does not track your sleep. So.
Yeah, but I think, I don't know.
I wouldn't wear a watch to bed anyway.
I had a Fitbit that tracked my sleep as well for a little while, and I hate it wearing it at night. So
all right, well, I am going to probably go out and buy the Apple 4 watch just because I'm kind of buying in now. So
you're buying it right now while we're talking?
No, I said I'm buying in now. All right, so we will be back next week. This is our first show in October, so we are going to try to hit up every week here. So what are we going to do between now and then? Michelle, what's on your plans? Besides baby speech science.
Baby speech science is my top priority right now, but working on getting my license in a new state here, and I'll probably be picking your brain a little bit, Mike, for some potential private practice stuff. I'm not immediately going back, but seeing what options there are.
Oh yeah. I got your back.
Thanks. Michael, what's your plans?
This weekend I will be moving into a brand new clinic, which I'm very excited about.
Woo!
Yep, moving from the second floor to the third floor of the same building.
Oh,
that's very exciting. No, it's good. It's actually very good. It's awesome. It's going to be it's going to be brand new renovated space, so really excited about that.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
For me, I'm just doing more ETRs and IAPs of my 80 kids and going to a soccer game this week for my son. So other than that, nothing exciting.
Nothing exciting.
Spider-Man.
Anything, Matt?
Not that I know of.
Okay.
I want to go to movies, but I don't really have the time or the money.
Venom is coming out.
Not excited for that, unfortunately.
Dude, it's Tom Hardy, bro.
I know.
It's Bane.
I know.
Did you see the pictures from the Joker movie?
Joaquin Phoenix?
Yeah.
I'm nervous about that movie, man. I really am.
Yeah, me too.
Like, I hate to say it, but I'm nervous because DC can't do anything right.
It's DC doing it?
Yeah. Joker's a DC movie.
Oh yeah, I forgot about it. Yeah, so it'll probably be bad. I forgot about that.
I was gonna say, how can you forget about that? That's unfortunately the
Dark Knight. Was Dark Knight DC?
Yeah.
Oh, I did not know that.
So here we go. Let's just wrap this up, shall we?
Sounds good to me.
Okay, cool. Our opening music tonight was Please Listen Carefully by Jazar. It's licensed under an attribution and share alike license. Our bump music is The Slow Burn by Kevin MacLeod, which is also licensed under an attribution and share alike license. In the immortal words of Janice Wright, I will say, be a willow, don't be an oak. The oak cracks under pressure, the willow bends and comes back up. For Michelle Wintering, Michael MacLeod, I'm Matt Hott saying peace. We'll see you next week. Bye.
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 You're listening to the Exceptional Podcast Network.